박지윤나.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, it's everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. It's Dr. Homebrew, everybody. Calm down. Everyone can relax. Everyone calm down. It's only Dr. Homebrew.
Your family beer physician.
Oh, thank God
it's
I
fine.
Can relax.
Everything's okay. Everything's fine. We're here now. We're going to drink your beer, and we're going to tell you how good it was.
And then, take your vital signs, too, which might not like that as much.
That's true. Well, or you might. You never know. And that's how it works here. We have two beers for you today. One is a Kentucky Common.
Kentucky Common.
Which I don't really necessarily want to go into that guidelines yet. And then the other one is another Bell's Two Hearted clone. Oddly enough, we just had one couple of months ago.
Yeah.
What?
We did a show with the Bell's clone.
So I'm pretty excited about that. It's not often you get this trend of clone beers. Let me drink this tasty water first.
But this is Bell's official, so as you will recall from a few shows ago, we were at HomebrewCon, and Bell's was there with us hanging out.
That's right.
The founders.
Not the
big wigs, the honchos.
That was really
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
terrible with
that
names.
That was a super
so
fun
it, yeah,
show.
But,
John Mallett?
Yeah. John.
And then it was really fun to finally meet John Mallett. I've read so much. I mean, read his book. Didn't he write the book on malt?
I don't know.
I swear he wrote the Brewers Association malt book. Brian's going to look it up. He's such a nice guy. And just the Bell's folks were so nice and just such cool people. It was really, I remember going to the actual Bell's location in Kalamazoo, and God, it had to have been 10, 15 years ago with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And it's such a great time. It was just the selection of beers and just the way the place is set up. I mean, Bell's has been just one of the premier Midwestern places for forever. Mm. And it was such a treat to get to go, 2005-ish. We had such a blast. And to meet the Bell's people in person was really, really a lot of fun.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah, I have everything but the malt book here. I have the hops book. I have the water book. The yeast book. But it is John Mallett.
He must have written them all.
Well, see, there you go.
I have that book. It's a great book.
Awesome.
I need to carry that.
Well, so, and what were you saying, Brian, that Bell's gave the kits away, right?
And they offered to kick out some
jams.
Some Bell's official Two Hearted Ale clone kits to our listeners and friends, and let some people brew it so we can taste them. So
right, because they have a homebrew store in addition to a brewery, because they're keeping their roots. Right, they came out of the homebrew ethos, have a brewery and a brew pub, and they also have a homebrew store even now, which is really cool.
Right,
why not?
It started as a homebrew shop, I guess, and people demanded their beers, and it turned into a little thing, so pretty cool.
Okay, and so we have a kit from one of those.
Yeah.
You
can order them from Bell's. Bell's General Store. And they were at HomebrewCon. Really nice folks there working there, and a lot of fun.
That's cool. And I think we're having a couple more of these come down
this
the pipeline,
the
right,
series,
as they're ready. Yeah.
So some of the guys from Doe's, some of my friends from the Mad Zymergists are brewing these. And the first one will be from my friend Jeff, who was at HomebrewCon with us on that show that we talked about. So yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, we also don't want to forget our fine sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com and learn about every way possible to make better beer, which is to clean and sanitize. That's it. That's the foundations. Everything else is just icing on the cake of our something or other, right? That's
you
what we figured out?
Wait.
This is two shows in a row with cake, Jason.
You can't clean and sanitize in one step.
No, you can't do it.
Don't tell me you can't do it.
You can't do it. You can't do it. Mm. Don't let me tell you. Go to fivestarchemicals.com and let them tell you.
They just want to sell you two chemicals, though, right?
they want to.
I'm the devil's advocate here.
They want to, in as much as a car salesman wants to sell you four wheels.
Because it actually works and gets you down the road.
You need to.
Otherwise, it could be called One Star Chemicals obvious reasons.
All right, I'm going to do something very weird.
Take off your clothes and run around the studio in circles?
No, weird. Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to speak with, who are we talking to? Keith?
Keith.
Yeah. Kevin.
No, Kevin.
Kevin. Same thing.
Yeah. Keith, Kevin.
Keith, close. Kevin, Kyle. Ish. Let's just call him Kyle.
That's
throwbacks.
A blast from the past, yeah. Right there.
All right, everybody. Hang on. We'll be right back. I promise. I swear to God.
Now, back to the examination.
There we go. See, it wasn't that long at all.
You online listeners?
Yeah, you guys are panicking.
Where's my three-minute song?
For no reason.
Everybody who downloaded it got to listen to 16 commercials, probably.
I hope so. That would be great.
I'm Ted Danson, telling you why you should buy Smirnoff Ice.
He's selling some app or some garbage like that. You're in for a real treat. Shut up, Ted.
It's like 15 seconds. They paid me to tell you in 15 seconds to drink Smirnoff Ice. So drink Smirnoff Ice.
You were married to Whoopi Goldberg. What do you know?
I think Whoopi Goldberg's pretty cool. And frankly, I always thought she was a little hot.
Wow.
I'm serious.
Wow.
She was Guinan on Star Trek The Next Generation. How can she not be hot?
Look. She makes a nice, like, THC butter thing, I guess, too, like a chocolate.
Oh, really?
For treating anything? PMS kind of things.
You're not.
I like how you said that in hushed tones.
Tried it.
You said that in hushed tones. Women's period.
Women's problems. Yeah. THC.
Okay.
Yeah. THC is good for curing a woman's period.
Lord. I quit.
I'm not a woman. I don't know about women's problems.
My wife doesn't listen to this show. It's okay.
All right, well, I've tried both of Kevin's contacts, and he's not getting... Oh, he's typing. So let's start that now, and we're going to get Kevin right on the line
here.
Is he
typing you a poop emoji? He's typing you a poop emoji, isn't he?
I wish he was. I wish he would, to be honest with you. I think that'd be amazing. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much, I guess.
Pretty good, pretty good. We're just pouring your beer right now.
Definitely not Kevin Smith.
No.
Thanks for sending us beer, man. I appreciate it. How old is this beer? When was it brewed?
I brewed this one June 23rd. So
okay.
Month and a half.
That's pretty young, yeah.
You bottled it July 20th.
Have you made a Kentucky Common before?
This is my second go on it. Okay. I just tweaked the recipe a little bit.
Are you from Kentucky?
I am not. My brother lived in Nashville and spent some time in Kentucky while he was out there, but... No particular connection.
You're near-ish to there, though, right? You're on the central time zone.
I am.
Yeah.
Just outside of Kansas City.
You're just trying to figure stuff out. I appreciate that. That's good stuff.
How long have you been brewing?
Geez, I probably started about 2004, but got more serious in the last 4 or 5 years, probably. Mm.
Cool. Yeah, the old slow climb. I feel you. I feel you on
not
that.
Not the fast burn and the decline to nothing like me.
Me. Yeah, I don't even remember the last time I brewed, man. It's disappointing.
Are you in a homebrew club?
I am. ZZ Hops.
That's funny. Where are you? Where's that club based out of?
Just east side of Kansas City, so we're sort of Lee's Summit, Raytown area.
Right. Very cool. That sounds great.
Excellent. Yep. All right, Brian Schar, I'm going to let you go first for a second time.
Whoa, what an honor. This is great.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You're welcome.
And Brian Cooper can give his second opinion as far as Doctor's Homebrew go. I really like this beer. You know, I swear I've had a Kentucky Common before, but it was forgettable. This was really interesting. Thank you for sending this, because it's a style that I don't have a lot of experience with, and I kind of want to go seek these out now. Aroma was 9 out of 12. Had a low, toasty, dark malt character. Low caramel, no hop aroma. That's okay in this style. No off aromas, you know, no diacetyl or DMS. Didn't get any obvious corn, and did get sort of a low berry slash grape ester. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Colors, light brown or copper. It's right on that border. Crystal clear. The head is low but very persistent, so very, very nice appearance. Flavor, initially the flavor is caramel and toasty dark malt. Some low bitterness comes up to... just balance, kind of in mid-palate. The balance is a little toward the malt. The bitterness never quite gets up to the malt, and that's okay. I like the flavor the way it is, with the bitterness being in a sort of a supporting role here. It's well attenuated. Finish is long and malt-focused. Corn isn't really noticeable, but it's not supposed to be. And after Brian and I have reviewed this. I'm definitely curious to find out what your malt bill was if you had done this all grain, and how much, if any, corn you put in. So we'll talk about that later on. Flavor, 15 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 4 out of 5. Body's low. I knocked at one point because carbonation was a little on the low side. This is a style that, from my extensive reading of the guidelines just 20 minutes ago, like I'm some sort of authority on this.
Right.
This is kind of like California common in the sense that it was brewed quickly, served quickly, fermented in the serving vessel, which was the time of barrel. So the thing would build up really high carbonation. This doesn't have to be like a Belgian triple where you have to have like a thick bottle and you're having four volumes in here and you're at danger of the thing exploding. But a little more carbonation, I think, would have been welcome in this beer. There's no warming, which it shouldn't have, no astringency. So that's fine. Overall impression, 8 out of 10. It's a really tasty beer. Of a style that I really haven't drank a lot of and really would like to drink more of. Frankly, I've said this for the last two beers of the shows we've recorded. We've been very fortunate. I would drink several of these. I would pay money for one of these. It's a great great flavor. It's proof that a beer doesn't have to be 10% to have a lot of flavor and a lot of complexity and a lot of character. It's flavorful and interesting. Again, the biggest complaint I had, more carbonation, would have really, I think, improved this beer somewhat. I gave this 39 out of 50 overall, so that is an excellent score, Jason.
Whoa.
I thought it was an excellent beer, and I will drink some more while Brian Cooper talks about how he scored this.
Yeah, this is definitely very good beer.
Yeah.
I really appreciate this. I appreciate this beer. Go ahead, Brian Cooper, please, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, so for those that don't know, the beer Kentucky Common is... Overall, it's a darker-colored, light-flavored, malt-accented beer with a dry finish and interesting character malt flavors.
Would it be fair to say, to me, it's sort of reminiscent of an amber ale?
A little bit.
But lighter body.
But, sessionable. It's refreshing with the high carbonation and the mild flavors. Highly sessionable due to being served very fresh and with restrained alcohol levels.
Yeah.
The guidelines
that's just the overall impression.
Like a cream ale with dark malt.
There's a lot of history about it. If you're interested, go to 27B in the BJCP guidelines and read that history there. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of based out of Louisville, Kentucky area. And, spread from there and then died out. And now homebrewers are reviving it. And it's, just one of those interesting styles. It's had a life of its own over the years for, the last 100 years pretty much. And now it's come back. So in the nose, I get a low, clean malt, notes of biscuit and light caramel. I feel like I got a hint of chocolate in the nose.
I get like pale chocolate.
Yeah, like a
thing
pale
coming
chocolate.
Through.
And to me, that seemed a little out of place because it's not necessarily supposed to be there. Nothing in the guidelines screams chocolate.
I get it more in the flavor.
They can lean towards the darker side, and this one's kind of like middle of the road for color, so it wasn't like a darker version. So it seemed a little odd to me, but again, not a big deal. It's no DMS, no diacetyl, just nice and clean and pretty light overall. But although, that said, it's a light beer, but there's a lot going on here. There's, a lot of malt aromas in there. So it's the complexity is actually pretty nice. There's a faint sweetness to it, but not overpowering at all. Just a low floral hop. Fruity esters are kind of background-y. It's an inviting aroma. It's like, this is interesting. Let's take a sip of this. Let's look at it first. So it's a semi-dark amber and very clear, creamy off-white head of very fine bubbles. Persists quite well. I actually gave it full points for appearance, 3 out of 3. Flavor-wise, medium maltiness up front. And here I'm getting notes of like a dark bread crust-like with low caramel. I'm not getting the chocolatiness here, so I'm like maybe just kind of off my rocker in the nose, and something is reminding me of chocolatey, pale chocolate.
I get it in the flavor. I don't get it in the nose so much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm the reverse of you.
I revised my...
Get more in the nose and less in the flavor, but...
Yeah.
The beer finishes pretty dry, and as it should. The balance is to the malt. cleanly fermented ale. It's slightly fruity, very low bitterness out of the way, very light floral hop flavors, and just that nice bread crustiness kind of comes out in the aftertaste, and it sticks around for a good while. For such a light beer, it really does have a lot of flavor and a lot going on for it here. And mouthfeel-wise, it feels maybe bigger than it really is. I think maybe the classic mistake in some of these would make them just too light. If you admit, you don't want it to taste like water. You want to have something there. It needs to be malty enough and substantial enough and have enough carbonation to drive a lot of flavor and keep it interesting. So, you know, there's no astringency here. It's nice and creamy, smooth, soft, as it should be. Medium high carbonation. You could use a touch more here. No alcohol warmth, of course. Overall, it's just a pleasant drinking Kentucky Common. Great appearance, excellent flavor for the style. I really like the flavor. I rated that higher than, say, the aroma and the mouthfeel. The flavor is just on point, and the aroma, like, oh, what is that going on? The question I had, too, was, I don't know, there ain't much corn here. It should have kind of a corny presentation, as I think Brian talked about a little bit, but I'm not getting a lot of corn here. It's like kind of a grainy corn-like note that's not coming out, but it's really interesting for what it is. And, yeah, you know, maybe it is expressing itself more like an amber ale in a way, like a light amber ale light. Yeah. But it's a really nice beer. I don't want to knock on it because it's just like, maybe it's a new style. I don't know. And Kentucky's have, you know, there's a range to them, of course, like a lot of beers. And it is fairly refreshing, but I think, you know, pushing up the CO2 a little bit is going to make it a little more refreshing and cut, you know, make it pop a little bit more. The malt flavors and aromas actually come across quite strongly here. So it's interesting for such a light beer. It's really expressive as it is, and a little more carbonation is going to drive some of that even a little bit more. So then you may be able to even back off a touch on some of that, especially even the darkest malts, just pull it up a little bit and maybe find a way to push up the corn-like notes. And, or maybe the corn may just come through and it'll, you know, lighten up the body a little bit if you do back off on some of those malts. So, but still, just a good, very good job. I it was hard to score this beer a little bit, but I gave it a 36. I thought it was a very good Kentucky Common and an interesting way to express that style. I also don't have extensive experience in it. One of my local breweries, Shadow Puppet in Livermore, brews a Kentucky Common and have some fun with that. So I guess a very popular beer of theirs, especially early on until they put out a hazy IPA. But that's their
until they shit lush themselves with a hazy IPA. Well, Kevin, hey man, why don't we get the recipe from you, sure, if you wouldn't mind? Maybe we can just start there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tried to nod towards the historical as much as I could, but mm-hmm. you guys were on point with the pale chocolate. I snuck a little bit out of there. All right, so it was about 63% two row, 20% flaked corn, and 10% six row with about 5% pale chocolate, 2% crystal 40, and then just a few ounces of Carafa 2 for color. The first time I brewed it, I had a little bit more Carafa 2 for color, and I just thought it was a little too roasty, so I backed off on this one, and now I'm thinking maybe I could have used a little bit more roast. But
You were fine. I think more roast would have put this maybe out of style.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking that maybe the pale chocolate potentially hides some of the corn, I wouldn't put more roast in it either.
Now, pale chocolate to me was, I mean, Brian, I don't think liked it as much as I did, but I thought that pale chocolate was perfect.
No, I loved it. I would actually take a skosh more, but I'm in love with pale chocolate. If I could marry pale chocolate, I would do it.
But the style doesn't call for chocolatey
flavors.
No,
it doesn't. You're absolutely right.
I would back it off a little bit, about half. Well, maybe still use it as your secret weapon, but it's just obvious to two of us here in the room. And jumping out, so it's such a light beer. There's not much to hide behind. So just lighten it up a touch. Like, here's my secret weapon.
Well, I guess we have to figure out, Kevin, what do you want out of this? Do you just want a better drinking beer, or do you want it to style to enter in competition?
So more the latter, and it really, it's so difficult to judge. I judged one, loved it, and that's why I started brewing it. And, but there's not really a lot of you know, recipes to riff off of. And so,
what Cooper's saying is 100% accurate. Back off the pale chocolate, let some of that corn come through.
And maybe even bump up the corn a little bit, or like use multiple, you know, corn sources. Use some corn in your mash and do some more, you know, more flaked corn, and just, I don't know. Yeah. Just mix it up.
Sure. Yeah. And then the rest of the recipe is pretty straightforward. It's just a little over 1.5 ounces of cluster at like 20 minutes. And then 1/2 ounce of saaz at flame out whirlpool.
Yeah. Did you do a cereal mash, or did you actually use flaked corn?
I just use flaked corn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can consider doing a cereal mash and do it like, you know, old school style. That might be a different way it'll come across. Like, you could still use some flake corn in it too, like I said, so you get both best of both worlds. But I think just cooking that corn material and combining it with your mash, once you've gelatinized all the starches in that, and using, did you use 6-row barley?
I did. I had about 10% of 6-row.
Okay, that's 2-row. No, that's the way to go. And that's, you know, the 6-row has more enzyme. It's going to convert the corn starches and get it. You can get up to even 25-30% corn, you know, with some of the, you know, the old school beer recipes. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, what they did back in the early 20s and, you know, and thereabouts. So they're the early, you know, whenever they started, these early 1900s, I meant to say.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, the guidelines, I swear, said like 35%. And I think that part of what we discussed a little bit before the show is one of the reasons you want to have these dark malts, I think, was to, adjust the acidity of the water, but B, you're kind of covering up some of the corn, was my guess. I'm not a historian.
Right.
My guess is that was, you know, somebody German brewers wanted like a Schwarzbier type flavor. And realize they could cover up that American corn.
Corn's cheap, but we got to make this thing taste good somehow, guys.
Exactly. So to me, the guidelines talk about a corn aroma, but don't require a corn flavor. And that kind of tells me that part of what the dark malt is supposed to do is cover up some of the corn. But there's this kind of high wire act here about how much corn do you really want. And I think you want to have some corn character in some way. But it's not as corny as a cream ale. I mean, am I making sense, Brian? You're kind of looking at me like I'm a little committing homebrew malpractice here.
No, I mean, it's interesting to speculate as to how the style developed. And not a lot is known about, you know, there's people that think, it would have been a sour beer. They probably did a sour mash. And it's like, no, it's not supposed to be a sour beer. No. You look at all the brewing records from breweries the turn of the century. There's no long acid rest, no sour mashing. No extensive conditioning. They drank it fresh. They didn't let it sour. So, like, this is right. Some people will make the mistake of souring it, and this one is in the right territory. It's not, you know, it's got a lot of interesting malt flavors. It's light, and it's really drinkable. So, really fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Thanks for sharing it. Keep working on that one.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Do you have any questions, Kevin, by the way?
No, I think you guys gave me a little bit
of
direction to go there. I think we're just
trying to give a little bit.
Yeah. Couple of gentle nudges, you know, both in our bathing suits, so it's not weird, but just a little.
I always encourage people to send us the same beer again, and then we'll review this show and see if what we told you made sense, and then oh God, what we told you made this beer horrible. Go back to what you did before.
Yeah, half of that's correct.
Awesome.
We encourage people to send in beer. Anyway, all right, Kevin. Well, hey, man, brew the beer again, and if you want to send it in, that'd be great.
Awesome. We'll do.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Cheers. Thanks, Kevin.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye. Bye. I mean, I ain't trying to listen to the show again, dude. You crazy?
I'm glad he shared that. That was actually really tasty. I enjoyed that a lot.
Well, I have a feeling we'll be talking to Kevin again anyway, so.
Same.
That sounds ominous or awesome. Yeah. Which one could that be?
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to drink some Bell's Two Hearted and, you know,
not a Katarina Sour.
Not a Katarina Sour, no. Although, maybe. We'll see.
Rumor.
Hang on. It's Dr. Homebrew.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. homebrew books, and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Craft Cans.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, thanks for hanging out, everybody. Brian is finishing up some last-minute adjustments here about how we're going to be pouring some
Bevo to pour us anonymized
beverages.
Beer.
Yeah,
this is
going to
be super exciting and fun. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, it'll be a good time for sure.
I was excited when I went to visit my friend Jeff, and he handed me two beers that looked about the same color and said, "Here, taste these."
I was excited when we were at HomebrewCon, and you and Jeff had recommended going to the Hot Wiener place around the corner the BN party.
Give me Jeff's information again, please, so I can punch him into Skype.
Yes, sir, I will.
So while they're doing this, you know, at HomebrewCon, there's Rhode Island, for being like 20 by 20 miles, like the smallest state, has more regional food than like any other state. And there's this stuff.
We've already talked about Hot Wieners, Brian. What the fuck's wrong with you, dude?
Because I love Hot Wieners. I would eat some right now if I had the if they were available.
Wieners.
I always
talk
about Wieners.
Really need to talk about them,
especially Hot Wieners.
So, what are we doing here, Brian? What are these anonymized beers we're talking about?
So, we have the Bell's Two Hearted Ale clone kit that a friend of mine brewed, and then we have actual Bell's Two Hearted Ale.
Okay.
And we haven't judged these yet, so they're just going to be presented anonymously live to us. And only Bevo knows which one is the homebrew and which one is the
commercial. I don't think we need to necessarily judge them. I think we can just talk about how accurate they are.
Right.
And then maybe just do a score on the fly. It's sort of like a commercial calibration. Jeff, what's up, dude?
Yo.
How's it going, man?
Hey.
Fantastic. Thank you for asking. I hope you're having a pleasant evening.
No, it sucks. Oh, I want to die.
It's an awesome evening. So if we balance out sucks and awesome, does that become pleasant?
No. Yeah. It becomes slightly annoying.
Finn misses the beach, dude. We had a lot of fun down there. Thanks for I hand carried this homebrew up and the commercial beer up from Santa Barbara, and we still miss the beach. It's a lot of fun.
Well, there you go.
Did you literally hold the bottles in your hands while, like, your wife drove?
That's probably why they're so warm.
No.
Yeah, he didn't want to tell you, Jeff, but he's like, dude, these are like 150 degrees. Like, he put them in the oven on warm.
I kept them in my put them in my car all day today, but inside a bag cooler, so they might be a little warm coming out. But there was
It'll
ice packs in there.
It'll be all right.
They feel cool.
Livermore's only 100, right?
Jeff, when was the last time you brewed with a kit, a homebrew kit? It's got to be like a weird flashback for you, right?
Yeah. No, that's a long... Hell, I don't even know.
Long, arduous journey since then.
Over 10 years?
You know what? Maybe the last time I did something was I ordered a Russian River consecration kit.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Okay.
How'd that
for
turn
more
out?
Beer, just so I could get some of the wood. You know, you got to get some wood.
You got to do it.
You got to get wood. How did that consecration turn out?
Pretty damn tasty.
Nice.
I should say. Yeah.
So we're all just kind of hanging out here thinking about getting wood, I think.
They send you a piece of wood with those consecration ale clone kits, though. It's nice. From the actual consecration barrels.
That is
so
really cool.
How did this kit work out for you, Jeff, as far as, other kits you've used? And you know, just take us through a little bit about your brew day with a kit receding a little bit into your homebrew experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first it was amazing because it was free. So there's that.
Well, right.
They were super cool to provide a kit at HomebrewCon.
Nice.
And so they quickly got it out, which was cool. The thing, I guess, that I've noticed, and we'll let the judges be the judge, but the thing that I noticed was that, you know, it's sort of up to you to screw this up.
Sure.
Because you've got the, you know, their hops, you've got their yeast, their house yeast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really just up to you to screw it up at that point. I think there's probably some water situation you could deal with. But otherwise, you know, the kit's pretty simple.
Sure.
And yeah.
Okay. How did you get the two hearted? Because you can't really get that out here, right?
Well, I'm in a unique situation down in Santa Barbara where we can get it.
Oh, but not necessarily properly?
No, you can get it at the store. So
yeah, okay.
Essentially Southern California. So I'm in like the best of the best. I can get Russian River and Bell's. So
what?
Yeah, you know, and thinking about it now, like I've seen Bell's Two Hearted on tap every once in a while. Up here too, so yeah, I guess it is. It's not the shady black market. It's legit whenever they want to send it out, I suppose.
So you can actually go to store.bellsbeer.com right now and order one of these if you want. They also have the official, which is their hazy IPA. I'm just giving them a free plug because they were so cool to come on the show.
They were really
John
cool.
And everybody that came on were just super cool people.
Yeah,
and they gave me a free T-shirt from the Bell's homebrew store there. The nice little shop that started it all, I guess. So
that's cool.
And I should have chatted those guys up more. I didn't get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
I didn't get one
so
either,
you can
Brian.
Buy that or it's the Bell's General Store online. You can just order one of these. We won't give it to you for free, but yeah.
All right, well,
so
Ben.
We've been given two beers.
He's handing a beers to us now.
So there's one on the left and one on the right.
Cooper, why don't you go ahead and take us, just do a visual examination, please, and then Brian, you can, I guess, chime in. I guess this is do it like a commercial calibration, like I'm saying. Just
march through the score sheet or something.
Yeah, we're kind of just walking.
I don't know which one was poured first, but the one on the right was a little less has a little less head
that
going on here.
Poured first.
And the one on the right was poured first. Okay, so that it fell.
Thank you.
Maybe faster, and then the one on the left has a little bit more of a head there. They're very, very close to the same color. The one on the left is a little hazier.
Yes, maybe slightly lighter in color, but that might be the cloudiness. And it's not cloudy, it'd be slightly cloudy.
We're doing two things here, right? We're trying to compare these, but we're also trying to pick which is the commercial and which is the homebrew.
Yeah,
I'm a genius at that. I'm so good at that. I always get it right.
So you guys think we ought to just kind of march through the categories and at the end decide whether left or right is the clone versus the commercial?
Sure.
And we're talking about appearance. We're skipping ahead a little bit to appearance, and that's cool. But yeah,
totally we can flash forward.
Left has more head. Right has less head. Left is cloudier. Right is crystal clear.
And Brian and I drank a lot of Bell's at the homebrew conference. They were generous to sharing the Two Hearted and the official. They're hazy, and they were all excellent beers.
They had a booth at Pro Night, which was great.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, several different beers there. Yeah, and they do a great job with everything they do.
Yeah, they do. And that's not just because they're doing this. I mean, I've loved Bell's for 20 years.
It's the number one beer, I think, 2 or 3 years running now in the AHA's best beers of America.
I'm a fan of Expedition Stout, but I like stouts, so what can I say?
Yeah. Okay. All right, what about flavor?
What do you guys get? What are you guys getting? In the back to the nose, though. What do you get, Brian?
Aroma. Okay. Let's think.
I mean, the one on the left definitely has a brighter aroma.
I might differ a little bit. I think it's the left. I get a little cardboard, and I get maybe a little more brightness on the right.
Interesting. Yeah, for me, the one on the right has that almost like circus peanut candied orange thing.
Does anyone get any light diacetyl in either of the beers?
On the one on the right, a little bit.
We'll have some dead air while I sniff things. Give me a second.
Sniff.
Yeah, I mean, the one on the left just... I'm getting hops.
Yeah.
The one on the right, I'm getting, like I said, some of that candied orange, a little bit of butterscotch, and some malt come through, so the aroma is not really as powerful as it is on the one on the left.
It's pretty hoppy, though.
I don't get diacetyl on either one. I get more citrus on the right.
Okay.
More of an orange peel.
Yeah, a little more dank, maybe.
Jason's thinking about circus peanuts, but I get like a orange zest on the right one that I don't get on the left.
Okay.
I bet Jeff's probably going, I don't know which one you guys are drinking either.
The one on the right, I would say, is...
This is a double blind. We don't know what we're smelling or drinking.
The body is prettier. It's got these nice orangey highlights to it. The head can be roused, and it's, you know, it's a pretty beer. It's brilliantly clear.
Frankly, Jason, I get more circus peanut out of the one on the left, which is fascinating.
The one on the left's cleared up a little bit, too.
Is there anything?
Yeah, just clearing a little. Just
so flavor wise, any minerally, any difference in the kind of minerally character?
I'm so bad at that shit. I will let you guys tell me what to say. I'm so bad at that.
On the right one, I get a lot of. I get no mineral. I get a lot of citrus. I get some little bit of candy like character, like Jason was talking about in the aroma.
Citrus and candy-like.
Citrus and candy-like character. On the left one here, I'll have some dead air while I sip this, or you can talk.
No, I'll go,
Brian just sipped the beer.
Brian just sipped the beer, and now he's going to comment.
I get more malt than the left one, a slight hint of cardboard. I get also citrus, but not quite. If citrus is like at a 5 or a 6 on the right, it's more of like a 2 or a 3 on the left.
So you would say the beer on the right seems fresher to you? Or,
I think
I'm not leading,
I would say
if you're saying cardboard in the left.
Or at least less oxidized, right? It could be the one in the left could be fresher, but it had exposed to more oxygen.
True.
But
yeah,
I get a little more. I get some cardboard in the flavor as well as the aroma. It's not to the point of being undrinkable. It's just a little, it's like a hint of cardboard that I get in that
now,
beer.
Jeff, do you have beers on the left and right of you as well? And have you organized them the same way as ours by accident?
I have not, because you took all of my two-hearted ale.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. So you're just drinking yours.
I'm just drinking mine, but I know which... I am familiar enough with the beers to understand which ones you guys are talking about.
Okay.
All right, well, that's good. Hints.
And I come back to the flavor on the left, and I'm not sure if it's cardboard as much as it's the combination of the hops and the malt coming back to it, right? I mean, I tend to be really sensitive to oxidation, so I go to thinking cardboard maybe earlier than I should. But the more I sip this, the more I wonder if that's really cardboard.
Right. Okay, so beer style-wise, this is an American IPA.
No, that's cardboard.
That's cardboard.
At least a hint of it, at least a little bit.
Bell's 200 Ale is a classic example, commercial example of 21A American IPA, so you can read the style guidelines. So how about mouthfeel-wise? Where do you feel this is at? Which, you know, an IPA should have a nice medium light to medium body, medium to medium high carbonation. I feel like the one on the left has a little more carbonation than this, at least.
I would agree.
The one on the right is a little flatter in this example.
And creamier.
Really? I would say the one on the right has more carbonation and less body. Hmm. The one on the left has less carbonation and more body.
I keep looking over at Brian's beers to make sure that he's drinking the same order that we are, and he is. I don't understand. I think our char is broken.
It wouldn't be the first time.
No, I want to
turn me off
is...
and turn me back on again.
And
I'm not sure if I want to specify how to do that.
We might need an adapter.
Well, and just so I didn't mess him up, they're clear. There's the one with a white sticker on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Okay.
White stickers on the left.
White sticker should be your left beer. I trust you, Beverly. Non-sticker should be your right beer.
Okay. You're smart, Beth.
I trust you, Beth.
Yeah,
I've messed this up too many times to not have a fail safe.
I've listened to the session enough times to hear some of those, but no, I figure that I trust you.
And I'm usually on the receiving end of that.
We don't want her to have to pour us out.
It's true.
No, that would be bad.
So that's my opinion. I think the one on the right is creamier, but I think it's the lack of carbonation, but maybe it's also the little diacetyl that you get, like a little butterscotch. I forget. Remind me.
Is there a difference between diacetyl and butterscotch? Diacetyl can express itself as a butterscotch-like flavor and a creamy slickness, right? Slickness.
That's what I'm getting out of that.
You've talked me into getting butterscotch in both of these. This is how malleable the sense of taste is.
Your brain, your squishy, wet brain.
My messed up, fucked up brain.
I'm not getting any butterscotch left.
You don't
want to
get close to my brain. My brain is all jacked up.
But Clintons killed Epstein, just so you know.
Dear.
Yeah. Clinton cash.
That's right.
Sorry. Let's see. Maybe diacetyl does that to your brain. But I can get popcorn lung. You know, I do like movie theater butter popcorn.
All right, Brian, what else do we got?
How's the dryness of the beer? The IPA should be pretty dry.
I think the one on the left is drier than the one on the right.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. That's what I think. I mean, I'm also not an IPA expert by any means. So
the one on the left, it feels a little more minerally, and it dries off your tongue a little faster.
Is that what?
I don't know if that's necessarily drier. The one on the right doesn't seem sweet.
How can I, as two grandmasters, can you just give me a very quick Brian Schaar, like 30-second 30-second masterclass in picking out how to differentiate minerality in a beer versus dryness? Because I'm not very good at that.
Dryness is how sweet versus not sweet the beer is. If it's sweeter in the finish, it's less attenuated. If it's less sweet in the finish, it's drier. Minerality has to do with, do you taste something like you're licking a rock?
Yes.
Do you taste salts or just plain salt or something in addition to how sweet or not sweet the beer is. Does that make sense at all?
Yes.
I would add it can accent the bitterness and the hop the hop characteristics.
So absolutely. Absolutely.
Based on that, I would say that I think they both have a similar minerality, because I think maybe like you're licking a rock can also be tannins, but this doesn't taste like tannin to me, which I'm well aware of because I'm a home brewer and I just extrude tannins. But
tannins give you that mouth puckering.
Yeah,
thing.
but it's also the dryness on your tongue.
Do because minerality can give you a mouth pucker, but doesn't have to.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But the tannins can start for me. It's like the center part of a cat's tongue where it's like sandpapery. That to me can be tanniny. I think the minerality is different than that. But when you said salt, I can get a little bit of that on the one on the left. On the one on the right, it's just kind of minerally.
Right.
So there's a difference in the water profile, I think, if I'm
well, the
dissecting your brain.
I think you're dissecting my squishy brain correctly.
The classic homebrewer adjustment is calcium sulfate. It's gypsum, you know, adding a little gypsum to your water to get the calcium you need to make your malts convert happily. If you have low calcium or a malt that needs, you know, help converting, or, you know, and sulfates, which, you know, And it's a part of Burtonizing your water too. But then there's also a lot of other minerals that go into it. So like minerality probably isn't even really a word, but like there's magnesium, there's sulfates, there's chloride. Chloride can accent the sweetness of a beer, and sodium. You know, there's all different minerals that do all different things. And we should just let Jeff talk about minerals and water for a while, because he's a master level judge almost. Once we get his exam results back, I think.
Minerality is a word. It's a non-scientific term used to describe flavors that smell or taste like rocks or organic matter.
Yes.
Soil.
So I wasn't talking out of my ass.
Mm-mm. I mean, maybe, but...
Okay, I was.
Yeah.
Partly.
Okay, well, we got minerality out of the way.
Okay,
I now think I understand. Bitterness.
Is one more bitter than the other?
That's hard because I feel like one is sweeter than the other. I think one is drier and one is not as dry. The one on the right. But it could be some of that sweet, creaminess of the maybe lower carbonation.
Could it be because the lower carbonation?
Yeah, yeah. Low carbonation, maybe some of that butterscotch.
I think there's a little more creaminess there.
Yeah.
I think the one on the right is a little more bitter.
Okay.
A little. I think the bitterness is close.
To me, I'm like, so like the left one has like, I felt a little more mineralness. And that's accenting the bitterness in a way that's kind of biting my tongue more, along with the increased carbonation in it. So, to me, it feels more bitter. But actually, I think they're probably about even. If this one was more carbonated on the right, it would be about even.
Yeah, for sure.
And I want to emphasize, we're talking about small differences here. I think these are, in a lot of ways, really close. Right? Yes. We're talking about how these are beers that are, cardboard or carbonation. The flavors and aromas and characters of these beers are really tightly grouped here.
Yeah. Yes. I agree.
Okay. So, which one is the homebrew? Can you guys guess?
Brian Shar, guess right now.
I am guessing left solely based on it being slightly more cloudy.
Okay. Wow. I'm guessing
the cardboard.
I'm guessing the right one is the homebrew.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to guess.
Because
it's a little undercarbonated.
Yeah.
It's a little, there's a little diacetyl thing. Those are really the only two things. Actually, to be honest with you, mainly it's the carbonation level. It's a little too low for, unless it's a growler fill, in which case then I'm just.
All bets are off.
Bev, tell us which one was. I happen to.
You probably
believe
know.
Or know that the. The one on the right is the homebrew, and the one on the left is the Bell's.
Beb, can you confirm or deny this, please?
I wrote it down also. Hmm. Left was Bell's.
Left and right are hard to remember.
Right was the homebrew.
Okay. All right.
Oh, man.
Oh, Brian Shaw.
So,
well, I lose this game.
I want to let you know that I my streak is intact.
Yes,
Jeff. Very well done, JP. Now, Jeff, will you tell me a story about when I got to Santa Barbara and, like, the first thing that happened when I got there and we went out to your kegerator?
I was kissed by four homeless men.
That's the worst thing I've heard this month.
Oh, yeah.
He poured me two beers.
Absolutely two beers. I poured them each, brought them out, sat down. We did the same thing you guys went through.
On your nice little patio out back of your house. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it is a question of one of them is a little bit undercarbonated. So mine's a little bit undercarbonated. Also was in a growler that, came up on Sunday to now. So there's that.
The ones that we tasted on your patio, though, were more evenly carbonated. There wasn't a big difference.
Yeah, was it harder to determine?
It was hard.
Jeff, did he get it right? Did Brian guess correctly?
He did. Okay. And what it came down to was actually I think the cloudiness. And so I would have guessed. So my beer is super clear because I put Biofine in it. Mm-hmm. And theirs is a little bit hazy, and so he sort of knew, like, hey, I know Bell's is a little bit hazy.
Yeah, I remember having
so that's sort of how he had sort of picked
bit
it
of
out.
Haze and...
I didn't realize mine was going to come out so clear compared to Bell's. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have done the.
You didn't realize that you were going to be too good at it.
Brian's intuition kicked my ass.
So cool.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I didn't know I was going to be excellent at the thing.
No, and I thought maybe the growler that I brought would, that Jeff would have. Shook up the keg a little bit and got a little cloudiness into there, so it'd be even harder this time. But also the combination of the lighter carbonation made it easy for me to tell again which was which. But I think the beers are pretty close, honestly.
I think they're very, very similar.
If you had to score this beer, where would you put it? Brian, the homebrew.
I would score this homebrew in the high 30s. As a clone brew, 38, 40. I mean, this is... These beers are really tightly grouped, and I thought the homebrew was the commercial example. So I gotta say it's gotta be a 40, right? If I thought the homebrew was the commercial one,
I would give it a 35. And just without really thinking too hard about it, my gut reaction, 35. If we like sat down and thought about it and really went through a sheet, that could change either way. But
I think when I tasted it. And I don't remember there being any diacetyl at all. And the carbonation combined with being a little colder than this sample has been poured that sat in my car all day. I apologize, Jeff. I'm tasting a little hint of diacetyl, so I would also push this down into the kind of mid-30s. I would give it a 36.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
It's a good beer. It's a very good beer.
It is a very good beer. And
a very good clone.
But what you're saying, what both of you are saying is absolutely correct. The flavors are there. The soul of the beer is there. It's very, very similar. And if the if we just judge it on if it had a little more carbonation, that would be harder. It'd be a harder test.
Yeah, no, I think the hops are in the right place, the bitterness is in the right place, the color's in the right place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are right about this homebrew, and it's a really good homebrew. I enjoyed it. I drank a lot of it when I was down there.
What do you think, Jeff, about this beer?
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised, how close it got to me, between the two. So, you asked before about buying kits and doing kits. I'd do this again. Because it's their hops and it's their yeast, their house yeast.
It
makes a pretty pleasant beer.
When you open that package of hops, I mean, what did you put it to your nose? And I mean, what did it, Centennial versus Bell's Centennial? What did you get?
I don't know that it was noticeable to me that it was that much different, but I think they get the cream of the crop when it comes to Centennial, right? So they go out and they're like, okay, they're rubbing their hands together and going, this is it, man. We want to put this in, a gazillion gallons.
And this is an all Centennial beer. So
yeah for sure. Cool.
Yeah. If this were old school Jamil show, Can You Brew It? I would say cloned.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. They clone their own beers.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Exactly. All right, Jeff. Hey, well, thanks a lot for being a guinea pig and tasting that, or not tasting, but brewing that kit for us. I appreciate that. And then having a mule.
There's more to come.
An inside mule.
No, thank you guys. It was a fun experiment, and I'm enjoying drinking my experiment.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's the best kind, man.
Drink some more tonight, right now.
All right, dude, take care, and, send us some other beer if you want.
All right, peace out, guys.
All right, later, dude.
Cheers.
Peace, bye.
We got peaced out.
Peaced out.
I haven't peaced out in a long time.
It's pretty
tight.
Oh, man.
Well, that was good stuff.
That was cool. Yeah,
I'm glad that we had it side by side. That was really the key for that.
It was a nice way to be welcomed, and I'm going down there and driving for 6 hours from Northern California, getting down to SoCal. You know, 5 minutes from the beach and looking out their front window at the clouds. But, there's the water a little bit. And
you're going to dox him right now, dude.
Walking out to the back and tasting these two beers side by side was a lot of fun for me. And
good. It sounds like it.
Jeff is a very good beer judge. And it's fun to do these kind of beer geeky things with your friends and just have some fun.
Yeah.
He's a great beer judge and great guy.
Sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody, for sending in beers. That would be, of course, Jeff and Kevin.
Thanks to Bell's for giving Jeff the ingredients.
That's right. Yep.
And thanks to Bell's.
Yep. And thanks to Five Star for supporting the show. And thanks to you guys for listening to the show. If you want to be on this show, email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. Brian with an I. And he will get you on the list. To get on this show, and who wouldn't want to be in the show, to be honest with you. All right, everybody. Yep. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll see you later.
We need a few good beers.